Who thinks that they're in control of their situation this morning? Anyone think they're in control? You know, it feels comfortable to think or feel you're in control of a situation, don't you think? But things can so very quickly move out of control. So the other week, I was visiting my mum, okay, and she is in her 93rd year, coming up 94. So she lives in not a nursing home, but a residential home in Birmingham. So drove down to see her. You're always questionably in control when you're going down the M6 nowadays, aren't you? No, nobody quite knows. But I everything went to time. I got in to see her, had lunch with her, and then I carefully planned out the day, because after lunch I said, "Mum, I'm going to leave you a bit early today because I'm going to see this friend and meet with him," and was helping him sort out some various stuff. So went out into the car park, got into the car, switched the car on. It's got one of these push-button starts, you know what I mean, modern car. Drove to go out of the car park, and my car stopped dead, blocking the entrance to the car park. No one could come in, no one could go out. Car's too heavy to push. What do you do? I thought, well, I'll give it a minute or two, and I'll start it again. It's a new car, been reasonably recently serviced. Press the button. Nothing. I thought, what on earth am I going to do? Fortunately, at that moment, somebody came out of the nursing home. They came out, not least because they wanted to get into their car and leave the car park. Anyway, they agreed that they would just help me push the car, because there's a slight slope just on the far side of the road, and I parked there. That was when the whole day totally fell apart and lost all control, because not only would the car not start, but I'd forgotten who my insurer was and who my breakdown people were. I'm usually quite good at these things. I keep a record of them. But in the record, it said that it was still Saga that was my insurer, and I'd forgotten to update it to the co-op. So when I phoned them up, they said, "You're not insured with us, sir." And it just got worse and worse and worse. So eventually I had the embarrassment of having to phone up my wife and say, "Can you have a look in the filing cabinet and see who our insurer is?" That at least got sorted out. But then they said, "Oh, well, we're going to have someone coming out and look at you and inspect your car. Then we'll decide whether it can be fixed and driven away. You can get home, because I'm 100 miles from home down the M6, or whether it's more serious. So normal service time so should not exceed 60 minutes. Okay, I thought, well, I'll go back in and see my mum. So I did that. And then the man came, looked at the car and decided, no, this really is not going to go anywhere. He couldn't work out what the problem was. So we're going to have to get you on a tow truck, sir, and take you back to Liverpool. I said, okay then. By the way, that's going to be another 60 minutes call out, which became an hour and a half, actually. So I had to phone up, and while all this was going on, cancel all my meetings in Birmingham, and they wait for the man to come. And then they phoned me up and said, oh, there's a bit of a problem, because we can't take you all the way back to Liverpool. We can only take you halfway. Well, that's not much good. But there is some better news, because we'll arrange for someone to meet you halfway and take you the rest of the way. So my whole day fell apart into a complete failure of control. And there was no alternative but to go with the flow. I couldn't do anything. My control had gone altogether. The reason I tell you that story is that today we're talking about Job with his search for meaning and the situation of suffering, and how he particularly, this is the point about today, how he dealt with the lack of control he had over his own life as things progressively went wrong, and his friends progressively came to talk to him and gave him what turned out to be not terribly helpful advice, and how the situation was, you know, totally dreadful for him. You know, his whole world, you know, fell apart. Now, the good news is it comes back together again, and I'm going to be talking primarily about that today. But we can acknowledge, I think, that we lack control in our lives, and to that extent we can begin to immediately identify with Job. And I think it's probably true of all of us in different ways, that through our lives we will experience suffering of different kinds, problems. They may be financial, they may be family, they may be medical, they may be a combination of all of those things through our lifetime, but we all know the problem. So far, we've had five really excellent talks on Job, one of which was from me a while back, but no pressure then, we've got to continue the excellent series of talks. We've talked about Job and his relationship with God, but we've talked about the fact that it has a universal relevance. So we're talking about one man and his relationship with God, but it has an application to all of our lives. So Job, to quickly recap, was a good and upright man. He was prosperous and secure. Within 48 hours, it all really fell apart. His world was overturned. Terrorism, attacks on his servants and property, bankruptcy when financially everything went wrong, bereavement as his different members of his family died under one might call them acts of God, acts of nature, but everything really went wrong. And so Job was really entitled to say, well, who's in charge here? I have put my faith and trust in God. Who's in charge? We're familiar with the word now, which even younger, you know, members of Rousing Breakout might have come across, because it's the word of the moment, sovereignty. Because it's all to do with Brexit, isn't it? Who's going to be in charge as we leave the European Union? Well, I'm not here to answer that question, but the point is, who is in charge in different areas of our lives really touches us close. We cannot avoid suffering and pain. How are we to cope and get through? How can there be a God of love in a world which is as it is? Is there really a loving God in control? If so, how can we relate to him? So, fairly big questions, wouldn't you say? So I'm going to start off by telling you about my holiday. Can't answer the big question, so I'll tell you about my holiday. Let's just make sure I press the right button. Oh, switch it on, yeah. Switch it on, there's a good start. Now try that one. If I press the right button, that one. Oh, there we are. Okay. Liz and I went to Derbyshire for our holidays. We took the caravan, touring caravan, and we went into the Derbyshire Dales. And that's Liz actually crossing the stepping stones at Dovedale. Lovely place. Anyone been there? Yeah, some folks have. Yeah, beautiful place. You have to concentrate when you're crossing those steps. Otherwise, you know, one false step and you get a soaking. The river flows gently and gracefully through this beautiful valley, but you take a wrong step and you get a soaking. And a less familiar sight, the little parish church at a place called Ilham, which is in the Manifold Valley, which joins onto Dovedale. And it's a picture postcard church. It's the name of the church. It's the Holy Cross. And it was there, of all places, that I unexpectedly encountered Job. How did I do that, you ask? How did he do that? Well, this is how. As soon as you go into the church, there is the baptismal font. And as you see, it's not a work of modern art. It's Norman. It's late Saxon, early Norman. It's 11th century. And thousands must have been baptized there through the centuries. And what catches your eye, what caught my eye, were the carvings on the panels. See, the first one is of two very simple human figures, just in outline. You can see the holding hands there. The second isn't quite so easy to mark out, to make out, but it's of a lamb with a cross, and sitting on the top of the cross is a bird. We think it's supposed to be a dove, or it does look like a cross between a dove and a vulture, doesn't it? But the third panel on the right-hand picture actually shows a dragon trying to devour its prey, trying to devour the head of somebody. And this is like a medieval cartoon strip. And this is a character from Job. This is the Leviathan, or the dragon, in Job. And the symbolism here on the font is that the dragon was forced to release its prey. Why? Because one of the figures holding the other's hand is Christ leading Adam out of the despair and the suffering of his life. And the symbolism to people who couldn't read or write in the 11th century was that through baptism, the church welcomed them into the family of God. And once they've been welcomed into the family of God, with Christ leading them out, then the Holy Spirit, the dove on the cross, was reinforcing the work that Jesus had done, that they were brought into the family of God. So for people who couldn't read or write in the 11th century, they had a cartoon strip that told them a story of how God delivered them. It told them that their children were brought into the family of God. It told them that they could trust in God, who would bring them safely from the dragons that do dwell hereabouts, all the problems of life, that Christ would deliver them. Now, does the story that portrays in the 11th century hold good today, would you say? Or has the elapse of time caused us to be wiser or have a different experience, or to think that is no longer true? That was the question that struck me. The story of Job, I really hadn't expected to find on a baptismal font. But it brought home to me the fact that in Job's story, we were talking about questions that were central to people's experience back then. The message that was being offered to them in the Christian gospel was that Jesus delivers. But as we look at these profound questions, can we still find that the answer holds good? Or are we struggling because of our different experience? We are a modern people, and what was true then is no longer true today. Does the essential Christian truth hold good? There's the question, isn't it? By the time I come to the end of this sermon, I want to assert that God is in control, and as we put our trust in him, we find a secure way through life. But before we get to that place, I do want to properly and seriously address the questions that we have to face to come to that conclusion. Just to remind you, if anybody wants to look at or consider the subject for themselves, as we've been going through the summer, there is a section of the Daily Bread that has covered Job through this summer, and if you would like to have a copy of about a week's series of daily Bible readings and commentary, let me know. I'll email it to you. I also mentioned that in terms of reading Job or listening to the book of Job, David Suchet's got a very good Bible. He reads right through the Bible, so in the book of Job, it makes very good and easy listening. You can listen to it on audiobooks. Our sermons through this, of which this is the sixth in the series, are available by podcast on our website. So there's lots of material there that can be accessed if you want to help your thoughtful consideration of these questions. But let's now go to what Job says today. And I've highlighted a couple of verses from our reading in yellow here. Because at this point, we've come to the place where Job, a broken man, having listened to and not really got very good advice from his friends, having been reduced to a very low place, becomes aware of God speaking to him. And God tells him who he is, who God is. And Job has a personal encounter with God that he's not previously had. And he comes to this conclusion. He says, I'm convinced you can do anything and everything, nothing and no one can upset your plans, not like me with the car when I descended into total chaos on that day. Nothing can upset God's plans. I admit I once lived by rumors of you. Now I have it all firsthand from my own eyes and ears. I'm sorry, forgive me. I'll never do that again, I promise. I'll never again live on crusts of hearsay, crumbs of rumor. As I read that, I felt really, didn't think Job had much to say, I'm sorry for. You know, he'd had a really tough time. But the point was, in this situation, he'd come to a personal revelation and understanding of God, and that spoke to his innermost being. What about our experience? You know, have you got an experience in your life where you've met with Jesus personally in the way that Job is relating that he met with God? Because that experience is the key to unlocking this whole question of pain and suffering. Because pain and suffering cannot be avoided. We cannot be in control right through our lives. Life is not like that. But we can place our lives in the hands of God. The picture that I have myself is this, where you're placing your, with open palms joined together, fingers closed, so if you like, your life can't trickle through. And in that situation, you're offering your life to God. And he will not turn anyone away in that situation. So that's the picture. And that personal encounter with God is the one that transforms all of life. Its pains, its sufferings, its joys of all experience. Last time I spoke, I told you a little of my personal experience because we're trying to share not only biblical truth, but share our own experience and tell each other how life has been for us. And I told you at that time that as a teenager, I had a very severe eye accident and was at risk of losing my sight. And it totally crushed my mum and particularly my dad, because my mum was instrumental, unfortunately, in the accident that occurred. I had a wire-penetrating injury to my eye. And having injured one eye, they said, well, sometimes, I'm afraid, you can lose the sight in both your eyes because one eye goes in sympathy with another. So there was a period of months where my parents were just crushed by this. My dad had been and was an atheist, an agnostic, a man who thought things through, who liked to be in control in a good way. By profession, he was an engineer and a safety officer. So his whole role in professional life was to try and keep control, to avoid accidents, to avoid things that can preventably be stopped from going wrong. That was the story of my experience. And I told you also at that time that my dad was given a tract, a little Bible leaflet, as of the Christian Good News, as he was doing his shopping one day, and I was with him. And that led him to a little church where he, not so little at that time, actually, in Hockley, in inner city Birmingham, where the good news of the gospel was clearly spoken out, and it was made clear that God acts today as he always did. God restores, God heals, God blesses. And my dad was primarily looking for my physical healing, but he found faith himself. The agnostic, the atheist, found faith that transformed his life. He became a Christian. It transformed the life of my mum and dad, and what had been a rather unhappy marriage became a marriage that was blessed in heaven. And all was not perfect. Things happened over a period of time, but he died a Christian man. He died early from asbestosis, but he died a Christian man. My mum, I mentioned, is still going strong at 93. But as for me, I wasn't physically healed in the way that I had hoped for, but I, with the advances of modern medicine, was able to receive a micro contact lens, and I have pretty close to perfect vision when I have my micro lens in. So I've always felt that God did a wonderful thing there. I'd rather not have had the problem with my eye, thank you very much. But that was my first experience of suffering as a teenager that I had to get to grips with in the way that Job described. Everything was going wrong, and I wasn't in control, and I didn't understand why this had happened. And answers didn't properly make sense, but they started to make partial sense. My father had put his life in God's hands. I was going to a Christian group of teenagers, and through my own experience of how they lived out their lives as my contemporaries, I came to faith. And so, does the Christian answer hold good today? Well, my answer is yes, it does. That's my experience. I can only tell you my story. I can't tell you, but you will know your story. And each of us can change our story as we put our lives in the hands of God, because that is the only way in which any control can effectively be exercised. That's not the only reason why you should do it. The real reason why you should do it is what we saw in the reading from John, where Peter says to Jesus, well, where else should we go? You have the words of eternal life. You speak healing, you speak blessing, you speak renewal. That's why we come to Jesus. That's why we should come to Jesus. But it also puts a new control in place in our lives that draws us. It's like a kind of magnet. It draws us towards God, and we have a new direction, a new purpose, a new blessing. This was Job's encounter that we read in the previous slide. This is our encounter. And so whatever the suffering is and the pain is that you have to deal with it, my guidance and advice is, as you saw on the baptism font in that Norman church in Ilham, with open hands, offer your life into the hands of God, because your life is safe there. It will take on new meaning and purpose and direction. And most of us in church today will have done that. And so the purpose of my discussion is, well, certainly it is to invite you, if you haven't done that yet, to do it, because that will be the pivotal turning point in your life. But if you have, and most of us have, the point I'm making is, let's keep on doing that. Let's keep on putting our hand in the hand of God, because that is where security, meaning, and purpose lie. Bit too fast. So the Christian basis for responding to suffering is sound. It's been proven in people's lives through the centuries. We can share our stories of testimony, one with another, of how God has acted in our lives. And this is the story that was on the baptism font too in Ilam. So we place the Old Testament story of Job in the context of the New Testament story of Jesus Christ, who speaks meaning and purpose and deliverance and forgiveness of sins into our own lives. This was the story from John chapter 6, when Jesus says, "Come to me, I'm the bread of life. I give fulfillment, meaning, and purpose. Come to me. I speak the words of spirit and life to you." And we with Peter say, we believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. So that's why I say that despite our not being able to be in control, God is in control, and all the question marks that inevitably accompany us through life, wherever you look, there will always be these question marks. We know that we have the ultimate answer. We know, and we don't pretend, we know that the problem of suffering and pain is always with us. We don't, like Job's friends, want to give facile, simplistic answers. But we want to say, I have put my life in the hands of God, and therein lies control, meaning, purpose. And that is what you can do too. That is our advice and guidance. So the Bible tries to deal with this openly and honestly. I've told you my story. I've told you part of my story. Life's problems go on. You know, in my working life, I've been made redundant twice, but God has, on each occasion, opened up a new way. When bad things happen, it's always best to place your life into the loving hands of a loving God. That's my testimony. That's my experience. And that, I think, as you take it away and reflect on it, is the experience that you can share with friends and family and all those who are seeking meaning and purpose. Only this week, I've heard of one lady in church whose friend has been diagnosed with leukemia, and we're praying for her. I've heard of other things where, you know, bad things are happening to good people. Marriages breaking down, financial difficulties occurring. And what I say over and over again is, this is how we find a way through. Control really does reside in the hands of God. So that with Peter, we come to Jesus and say, where else should we go, Lord? You have the words of eternal life. Amen.